A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Audio Time Capsule, episode 13. For those of you new to the show, I'm comedian Simon Kane, and this is the podcast where I bring on a guest, get them to leave 20 questions, and then, in a year's time, bring them back on to answer them. I then edit it so they're talking to their past self.
All past voices will sound like this.
And all present voices will sound like this. To give you an example of how the show is structured, here is a question that I recorded for myself just before this week's guest arrived.
Hello, Simon. Are you doing Edinburgh in the year that you are in? You are currently at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival 2016, and you're not sure if you want to do the Fringe next year. So, assuming this goes out, it'll either go out in 2017 or 18. So, whichever year it goes out, are you doing the Fringe? And if so, why did you choose whichever option you chose?
Well, Simon, firstly, that was a horrifically worded question. I am doing the Fringe. It is 2018, for your own reference. I am doing a show that at the moment is titled Human in Progress. I've got my room confirmed at the Suites venue. I don't have a time slot yet. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to do a full run. I'm also looking at taking up a second show for the first time, which is great. A bit nervous because that's a lot of work. But yes, the shorthand is I did Edinburgh last year in 2017, and I will be doing Edinburgh this year, 2018. Thank you for asking. Let's get on with the show. This week, I'll be talking to American comedian, online viral sensation, and avid runner, Liz Mealy. She started performing at just 16 years old and has gone on to perform all over the UK, all over the US, and at the Edinburgh Festival. And she has released 2 comedy specials, which are available on iTunes and on her website. If you'd like to find links to those, they're in the show notes or on her website. I can't wait to hear this. She always has a billion plans for a billion different projects. And I always wonder, we're quite good friends, and I see on Twitter and Facebook how many things she succeeds in and how many things she gets done in her real life and in professional life. And I'm interested to see how many things she gets done and how many things she starts and has to abandon. And this covers all of those. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope you like what you're about to hear. If you're new here, please do remember to hit the subscribe button. If you're old here, please do consider giving us an honest, ideally positive review in iTunes. If you've got anything negative to say, email it to me directly. And either way, please do join the Facebook group. It's called the Audio Time Capsule, and it's on Facebook, obviously. But for now, let's open the Audio Time Capsule of Liz Mealy.
Hi, my name is Liz Mealy. Today's date is August 22nd, 2016. I am currently in a creepy room in the Grass Market Hotel in Edinburgh. I feel, I'm tired, but otherwise I feel like it's a cool project and I'm interested to see how I don't accomplish anything.
Hey, I'm Liz Mealy. It is July 15th, 2017. I guess I'm excited. I was actually thinking about opening my time capsule a couple of days ago and realizing I've done nothing. One of them was like the stuff I was going to accomplish this year. And it's there. I want to do it. It's still a want. So I'm a little, I guess I already know I'm going to be disappointed in myself.
Actually, before I decided to do Edinburgh, I wrote a pilot of what would be, I always say my sitcom, but that always kind of confuses people because it's not like a Seinfeld. It's not completely based off my life, but it's basically something that's loosely based off my childhood. And I wanted to turn a piece of it into a short film. So I already have a poster and a lot of the work for it, and I've cut it down to 17 pages, but my goal is probably to cut it down to like 10 and then to develop it. So probably do like a Kickstarter to make money for it. I already have a producer that's interested, and then make this short film, which is called The Claude, which is just about a girl that drops out of vet school and ends up being a receptionist for her parents. So basically, actually doing that, because I paid money to get this poster done, and I love my poster, which shouldn't be the drive to do anything, but my poster's really nice. and from there, you know, so it would be something that I would both stand alone as a short film, but also can be used to pitch my, you know, sitcom in quotations. So that's like my next thing. And then I also, before this trip as well, I had an idea for an anti-romantic comedy, and my goal this trip was to write the outline, and I have done none of it. So I have like a list of ideas, but I need to outline them and start to figure out some of the big gaps and problems in the screenplay via the outline. So those are like my two main writing goals. So yeah, I guess I would just want to know if you actually made your short film or if something deeper happened with your sitcom, and then if you even started writing your movie, which is a big undertaking that you know is.
I knew the answer to this question. This is the one I was stressing about. I've done maybe an hour's worth of work for both of those projects. I feel like I wake up every 3 days getting ready to work on The Claude. And I needed like fresh eyes. So I sent it to a couple of friends, because I needed help cutting it down, because there's a problem when you write something and it's like done in your mind and then you want to cut it down and you're like, but everything is beautiful and genius and I can't lose any of it. So I realized it was kind of paralyzing me, and I sent it to a couple of friends, and they helped me give me ideas of what to cut down. So it's like physically cut down in handwriting, but I have to literally go in to final draft and cut it down. Like, that's like the only thing stopping me from making this movie is just cut, like finally having a final draft of the short version of it. And then from there, I can talk to my producer, I can do a Kickstarter, I can make this thing. And I've just weirdly been, I haven't been like paralyzed, like I'm not doing it because I don't want to, but it's a little bit of like so many other things have come up that have taken over my time. And probably I should have known that one of my goals was to turn my hour that I did at the Fringe into an album. So that kind of took priority. So I did accomplish something. It just wasn't the two things I said I was going to do. So I came out with an album. I've done, like I said, probably an hour's worth of work on this script. And then I did write a summary and pitch my film, my anti-romantic comedy, to a production company. And them wanting to hear the pitch got me to like write the summary, but I haven't even done the outline. So I've done, like I said, almost nothing.
I guess I always kind of divide my goals into like sections. So like for me, like my writing projects are different from my stand-up, which is different from clearly personal stuff. So I would say my stand-up goal is probably to take the hour that I'm working on right now and pretty much done with, that I've been performing here at the Fringe. And the biggest goal would be to have it be a special, because I've already done an album with my last hour. I don't need it to be like a Netflix special and like super huge, but just something that's visual that's going to expand my fan base. So I have some meetings when I get home in a couple of weeks. So, and a production company is interested. So I guess, you know, the goal is to have a special. But if that doesn't happen, clearly put it onto an album and get it out there, and then to write a new hour. And it's taken me about a year and a half to write all the hours I've written. So I guess my goal is to kind of shave off a little bit of time. I mean, to me, time isn't nearly as important as quality. So if it takes me another year and a half, but I'm happy with the new hour that I write, I don't care. But I guess by the time I talk to myself again, my question would be, how far are you in your hour? So are you close to being done? Do you still need that extra half a year? Are you happy with the quality of the jokes that you're writing? And how has the last hour, however it came out, special album, whispering it into someone's ear, like how was it received, and how has it taken your fan base and your notoriety to another level?
Good question, Liz. Okay, I feel better now after that from the first question. I made an album. I did take a crap ton of meetings about trying to turn it into a special, and I worked really hard, and there was some interest. HBO showed a little bit of interest for a while. CISO showed a little bit of interest for a while. But I mean, I kind of knew what the failings were, which is people know me, but I'm not famous enough for anybody to give me money. So I pushed it for a while. I pushed it to the best of my abilities with this production company who really liked me and wanted to help me out. But in the end, because of the Fringe in a lot of ways, I was so over that material. And the only thing that was going to excite me about re-recording it would be if it was something bigger and better, like a special. So when that seemed to kind of be dying and not coming to fruition, I decided to just rip the audio from one of my previews that I like. It was like literally right before the Fringe. I loved the set. And even though I had come up with tags and all this stuff during the Fringe, I was so over the material and I didn't want to say it again. And I know how robotic I get when I'm disenchanted with it. So I literally ripped the audio, put it on a CD, and released that as an album. And that came out in March. It was number 4 on the iTunes charts, only for like a couple of days, but you know, it was never on the chart. My first one wasn't on the charts. And a lot of people that bought my first album, bought my second album, were excited about it. It got reviewed in a couple of magazines. I've never had my album reviewed before. It's selling really well when I'm at shows and still online. It's getting played on Sirius. Like, my first one popped off pretty well because I made a viral video that got it a lot of attention. So I don't know if this one had more notoriety in the sense that people consider me a comedian, which I don't know if people knew I existed when I did my first one. But I mean, it didn't launch me to new levels. I think it helped secure the fan base I already have and get a couple more people to know who I am, in a sense. And I'm proud of it and I'm happy with it. And I did make a valid effort to make it into a special. So even that not coming together, I'm still kind of happy and proud. As of what will be my third album, possible special, whatever it turns into be, I have about 30 minutes, and I'm honestly almost proud that I'm just on track of my pattern, which is it tends to take me about a year and a half to write an hour. So I'm at around 30, 35 minutes. It's exactly where I should be. The material is it's coming out differently in a weird way, and I've learned a lot about my writing style. So I'm kind of just letting it happen. It's weird. You start to get to a point where, like, I think I was so controlling of how I wrote and how much I wrote and when I wrote and what I wrote about the first, like, 10 years of my career. And these last 5, I've kind of just let myself be me and fail publicly more openly. Like, I used to, when I would be on stage, I would have to have 70% of the joke, and then it was like about filling in the gaps and making it tighter. And now I'll go on stage with like an idea and maybe a punchline, but I don't even know if that's true, and I just kind of bomb until it gets better. And that tends to come out. I tend to be prouder of those jokes because more of who I am off stage comes out on stage, and I sound more like myself on stage. And it just feels, not to say my older stuff isn't authentic, it comes from who I am, but it just feels more of a conversation. So I think my time length is about the same, but how I'm writing the jokes is has really grown in the last couple of years. And I think that's, like I said, quality is always over quantity and pace and all that stuff. So I mean, everything in stand-up I'm pretty happy with.
I guess my question to me is, I have so many health problems, and I'm on my 5th specialist. What are you what are you working on right now to fix your health problems, and have you stuck with them, and have they succeeded? I mean, for right now, I'm on like a super strict diet that I'm breaking as we speak. Not horribly, but I'm feeling the consequences of those breaks. I think if I was strict with them, I would be closer to getting better. But I have a doctor's appointment in a week and a half. But I think it's hard. I've been on a strict diet for 2 years, and I've broken it. I broke it heavy when I was in Italy a couple months ago, but it's hard to be on the road for 4 months and not break it. So a part of me is like, how much of a setback did I develop for myself? But also, like, do I even believe this diet's going to help me? In some ways, I do. In some ways, I mean, what's really interesting is, so I have hormonal acne, which isn't, how do you say this? Like, it isn't the problem. It is it's a symptom of a bigger problem. So I kind of have always used my acne as a barometer of health. And it's gotten better. So, like, it used to be, like, huge cystical, you know, every time I ovulated or, like, right before my period. And then it became just, like, pimples. And then, you know, sometimes, like, and it used to be all the time. And then it just became twice a month. I haven't broken out in 3.5 weeks. I started eating smoked mackerel from Sainsbury's every day because it was cheap and I liked it. And it takes, like, it's already cooked, so it just takes, like, you know, 5 minutes to reheat it. And I was doing some topical thing with medical grade Manuka honey, and my I'm not wearing makeup right now, and I don't do that very often, but my acne scars are going away. I haven't had a pimple in almost, it's been 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. So, you know, that's something. You know what I mean? Like, because if you think of everything, whether it's a rash or, you know, stomach problems like I have or acne, like, it all is saying that your equilibrium is off. So to cure one part of my broken equilibrium makes me feel like I'm headed towards a different path. And maybe even that I'm healthy enough to fix that. So the way I've learned the body works is that there are certain things that you know this needs to be fixed, but if your immune system is not strong enough, it doesn't matter how many vitamins and how much, you know, shakes and, you know, juices you throw on your body's so far along that you need to fix the bigger problem before you start fixing the smaller problem. So it feels like I'm getting healthier enough that I can fix a small problem. So then I hope. My goal is to cure my candida, and I have like a super candida that most people can get rid of in 3 months, and it's been 5 years. So I'm hoping that'll be gone in a year. If it's not, I might be crying in this interview. So, my question to me is, do I still have candida, and am I still on this strict diet, and have I seen any improvement since, you know, today, on top of the improvements that I've seen over the last, you know, 2 years? And if my face is still lovely, because I always told myself if I got rid of my acne, I'd be happy about life in general. Because, you know, you make baby promises to yourself when you feel like shit, and I'm trying to stick with that one. So maybe do I still like my face? Nice vain question in the middle of it. How do you feel about your face, Liz?
I love my face. I did cry 3 days ago in two different doctor's offices. So that is accurate. This journey never ends. I still have candida. It is bane of my existence. I don't know. I did that doctor's appointment that I referenced. I did see that guy. I saw an herbalist every 6 weeks for a year, and I saw some progress, and I went back to being on a super strict diet, and I saw some benefits, but not enough to justify spending $300 every 6 weeks out of pocket. And I cried in his office every 6 weeks and would be angry with him like he did this to me. And I finally he was the one that was like, why don't you take a couple months off and do this and that? And I was like, I'm never coming back. Like, I'm just not, I can't justify the money for, you know, 5% of a change. My face went to shit again for up until, no joke, 2 weeks ago. This is, again, the best my face has ever looked. I did try eating mackerel just as much as I did in Scotland. I think it has to do something with the water, too. I don't know. Like, I, no joke, every time I go to Scotland, my face looks the best it's ever looked. But I'm also, like, the saddest I've ever been. Like, that's not true. I did Glasgow for a couple of days, and it was some of the best shows I've ever done. But it's still, like, cold, and I don't understand anybody. And it just, I feel my prettiest, but it's just not enough for me to live there. But again, I do think my face cleared up because of diet. I saw a gastroenterologist. I don't know. There's a word in there that I can't spell or say. And I saw that person. I'm 90% sure I have an autoimmune disease. I think I have some form of IBS. This doctor thinks so too. I have to get a colonoscopy, which is like, again, another thing I'm not excited about. But it'll help confirm if I do have IBS. If I do, like, I read all the symptoms, I have cured or lessened them by 70% in the last 5 years just with diet alone. So I have, in that sense, seen a lot of improvement. And I do think if I decide to go on drugs or if I do figure out exactly what it is, like, the reason I even think my face cleared up is I started to look up. I used to eat the paleo diet, like a stricter version of the paleo diet. And then I looked up paleo autoimmune. And one of the biggest changes, you cut out nightshades, which is like tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant, peppers. So those are one of the things I've never cut out because mashed potatoes and fries is how I feel joy. I cut them out and my skin cleared up immediately. So a part of me, if anything, it only confirms that if at the very least, I have some kind of intolerance to certain foods that wreak havoc on my body. I still have a bunch of other issues. I still, if I slip up with, not even like the things that people like warn you about, like dairy and stuff, like dairy doesn't seem to affect me, but I had lentils the other day and it felt like someone was stabbing me for 4 hours in my stomach. Like it was just like, I was like doing a radio show and I was like super quiet and the guy was like, "Are you okay?" And I was just like, "I think I'm giving birth." Like I'm in so much pain. So it's like, I'm on every quest to, you know, I'm now, it's new doctors and new situations. I had a polyp growing in my uterus this year that I was supposed to get surgery on. And I kept postponing it because she told me life changes might help it shrink. And then it didn't shrink. And then I couldn't get the surgery because I was touring so much. And finally, I decided to get the surgery. They test it one more time and it ended up shrinking. And the only change I made there lifestyle wise, because I was already on a strict diet, was I went to Italy, ate anything that I wanted. Apparently that's like my kryptonite. It's just like any place that has authentic cannolis, I was like, fuck my health. So again, I went on vacation. I slept in every day. I was with my boyfriend. I, you know, ate cannolis. I tried not to think about comedy. Yeah, I just slept a lot and tried to forget about my life. And then I came back and they said my polyp has shrank and it was too small to operate on. And I was like, yeah, cannolis fix everything. That's the lesson. So yeah, I mean, I still have my candida. It still feels like an upward battle. It still makes me cry every 4 to 6 weeks. I don't know. It's in some ways, I'm hoping if I do get diagnosed with some autoimmune disease, as sad as that would be, at least I would have an understanding of what's going on with my body. And I, like I said before, I fully believe if I fix that, then all these other symptoms that seem to not go away might start to come into place because I'll know how to attack this main thing, which will make me stronger to attack other things. So that's, it's, I think, progress. I still love my face.
Boys, I guess. Boys is a thing. I'm single. I'm single. I actually took the summer off from boys. I Instagram messaged with one boy, and I technically have a date in a week, but who knows, and it is whatever. I got dumped in March. It's now almost end of August, and almost the end of August of 2016. So a part of me is, I guess, curious to see if I'm going to stick to the whole reason I took a break from boys in the first place, which is not rushing into stuff due to being hurt. And to actually, it's weird. I don't know if guys have this, but like as girls, like we're always so like desperate for like attention and somebody to love us that you're, anybody that's excited about you, you're just like, well, maybe he's the one. And you don't really do the work to see if you really like the guy. And I think for the first time, my mentality on a date isn't, does he like me? It's, do I like him? And my curiosity is, now that I feel like I took this break and I didn't rush into anything, am I going to become desperate because I haven't like had sex or even like been around anybody I was excited about for a long time? But like, am I going to continue to have the standards I think that I was setting up for myself, which is not to get involved with anybody I'm not crazy about and that isn't going to take how I feel about myself to the next level, because it seems like the last couple of guys I've dated have made me feel like I've spent all this alone time to be like, I think I like myself. And then I date somebody and I'm just like, why am I the worst? And I don't want to feel that way anymore. That's how I felt my entire childhood. So I want to bring somebody into my life that's going to make me feel as good as I feel when I'm by myself, but also maybe even better. So a part of me is, I'm curious to see if this break and seeing how I feel clearly so much better by myself than how I feel in a relationship, if I can find somebody that maintains that good feeling, if not takes it to the next level. So that's my goal for myself. Don't date people that make me sad. Am I capable of doing that into my adulthood? We will find out. The question would be, did I meet anybody that didn't meet my expectations, and how did I handle it? Did I try to date them, break it off pretty quickly? Did I treat them the way I would have wanted to be treated if that person knew pretty quickly that I wasn't going to be like a girlfriend or something more.
Totally forgot about this question. Could not have been prouder of myself. This is actually like the only thing, not the only thing, but like, quite frankly, like if I could high five myself from my past, I would. Like, seriously, did not remember that question. And I'm like, almost like, yeah, this is such a great idea, Simon. Good job. I'm like really proud of myself. I met a dude. It's funny, the guy that messaged me and I had a date with, he kind of like messaged me one more time and then I
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Bonded and kind of fell off. And I didn't chase him. Like, I'm a chaser. And I was just like, no, if you're going to be flaky when, you know, all the expectations are like low and it's fun and it's flirty and there's like, you know, not a lot of effort, what are you going to be when it's real effort? So like, he didn't really respond. And there was this kind of light, like, we'll talk when I get, because he like messaged me like a month before I was coming home. And I was like, I'm in, you know, Scotland. We'll talk when I get back. But he wasn't even doing this like light stuff. So I just never messaged him. I was like, I don't like flaky people. And if you're too busy to respond to a like stupid message, I can't imagine what you're going to be to date. So I didn't message him. I was kind of like, all right, well, you know, it's a little disappointing, but I'm not chasing this dude. And then I had been messaging this other guy completely like work related. Like, he was touring Europe and Russia. I was introduced to him by another friend. He was asking for like Swedish contacts and Scandinavian contacts. So I sent him a bunch, and he had like knew a friend of his was coming to the Fringe. He recommended my show. So I met one of his friends. And I even said, I was like in this like good place of platonichood when we were messaging in July, that I was like, oh, it seems like we are doing the same thing. I would love to share contacts and just meet you, because I didn't know who he was. And so I didn't think anything of it. I just knew that I was meeting him sometime in September, and he messaged me like the day I got back. And he was just very like active on like social media, like commenting and being very nice, and was just very friendly. And I didn't think too much of it. He makes fun of me now because he's now my boyfriend. He makes fun of me now because he was like, you wore your favorite shirt and da 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 da. I was like, well, that's because I had been on dates previously and I showed up looking like a bum. And then I would like the guy and I'd be like, yeah, but he saw me look like a bum. Like I was like, my hair was like a nest on my head and like I didn't shower and I like rolled out of bed. And my friend, I forget what movie she quotes. It's like a mafia movie. And she was just like, you're supposed to always be closing. Like, always be closing. And I was just like, and a part of me is like, that's so dumb. But then I was like, all right, it takes no effort to like comb your hair and put on some makeup. So I didn't know I didn't think anything was going to happen with this dude. But I was like, all right, shower and try not to look like a bum just in case. So it looked pretty good. But I honestly had no expectations. The last thing I wanted to do was date another comic. I cannot stress that enough, that I had no real intentions of caring about somebody that does comedy. And I met him and we talked for 5 hours straight, like just had so much fun. And he was so fun to be around and so sweet and so cute. And like, just, I don't know, a part of me was like, I kind of noticed throughout dating that when I'm heartbroken, I am attracted to different people than when I feel good about myself. So the biggest goal with taking a break from boys over the summer was to heal enough that I could attract somebody because I liked them. And again, not attract somebody because I was sad and I wanted to be loved. And I was in a good place when I met this dude, and I felt good about myself. I was exhausted. I was deeply, deeply, deeply exhausted. But I had so much fun with him and he was so sweet. And he texted me as soon as I got home to be like, when can we hang out again? And it was this kind of weird thing where like I think we both knew that we liked each other, but I was kind of apprehensive because comic and life and boys. And he was apprehensive for his reasons that I learned later on. And we ended up dating for a couple of months. And then in November, he started to get like distant and I could feel it. Like it was like this week where it was very palpable that he was kind of pushing me away. He was still making plans with me, but he just seemed like it stopped growing in a way. And it was only for a week, but it was like, I'm very sensitive to that stuff. And we had this kind of really nice night, but then it kind of got weird. And I finally said something to him. I was like, you know, if you don't want to be in a relationship, like I want to be in a relationship. I want this to be something. And he had kind of mentioned once before, like early in the relationship, that he didn't want to be in one. And it kind of made me sad. And I was like, oh, I should probably end this. But then he never treated me like he didn't want to be in a relationship. And then that week he treated me like he didn't want to be in a relationship. And I called him on it and he was very nice about it. And I was very nice about it, but he was like, you know, I really like you. I love spending time with you. I always told him the thing that was most attractive about him is he had a washer and dryer, which is very rare in New York City. He's like, I want to wash your clothes. But he's like, yeah, I don't know if I want this to be more than that. Like, I don't think I want to be in a relationship. And I remember just like him going to sleep and me just laying in his bed. I ended up like texting a friend at 3 a.m. just being like, why is this always happening to me? And, you know, we kind of had this weird morning. And I think he thought we were just going to continue to do what we were doing. But I went home and I was like, I'm out. I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not going to be just this girl that people are like, cool, we can hang out. You know, like this, I can't even like just this hip pocketed, I'm available when you want me to be available person. And I wrote him an email and I was super nice about it. I was like, I think you're incredible. I have really enjoyed getting to know you. I really like you. And I would like, I'm not saying you have to be my boyfriend now. I'm not saying this has to like tomorrow grow into something, but I would like to know that you're open to seeing if this could be something. And right now it feels like you're not. And if you're not, I'm gonna go. And it was super nice about it. And he got back to me right away. He's like, hey, I'm at a show. Let me get back to you in a couple of days, da, 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 da. And he got back to me and he was like, you're right. I'm not ready to be in a relationship. I just got out of something. I think you're great, but I think I do need to take a step back. And I was heartbroken and I was really bummed out because I really, really liked him. But I was also like, it doesn't matter how much, I've liked a lot of dudes. It doesn't matter. If they're not willing to try, then it's just you chasing somebody. It's you fighting something. And it's always, it's never equal. And I was like, I just kind of learned my lesson that if they don't choose to try, I can't force them to. And so it was like a really nice breakup. It was just like me, as both of us being like, hey, and I told him, I was like, hey, maybe, you know, if down the road you get your head straight. And a lot of it was him being like, I keep messing these things up and I want to know why. But I was just like, if you get your head straight and I'm single, maybe we can try again. But if, you know, if not, we could be friends. But I am going to distance myself because I knew I really liked him. And I know hope is an evil thing sometimes. So I think that messed with his head because he never left me alone. Like, he would text me every day, just, you know, like, I had back problems at the time. So he's like, oh, you should see the guy that helps me with my back problems, because we're just both a mess. And then, you know, he would ask, it was like around Thanksgiving, so he's asking about Thanksgiving, and like every day he found some way to like talk to me. And I kept pushing him away. I kept being like, you don't want to be in a relationship, so leave me alone. And, you know, we slipped up once, like we slept together once, and I was like, okay, maybe I just need to get that out of my system. And then again, I pushed him away, and then he was like a mess and like falling apart, and we went for a walk. But again, I was like, I'm not sleeping with him ever again. I'm not doing this anymore. And I just kept doing this. And then after, I think it took about like a month, he finally was like, okay, I think I want to try. And I was like, eh? Like, I was like, And then we started up again, and we started up from a place of two people knowing what the other person wanted and what the other person was scared of. You know, we didn't become like boyfriend girlfriend right away. We just started going back on dates again and just trying. And I mean, I think it's 10 months now, which is, you know, my first relationship in 2 years and my longest relationship in maybe four. And, you know, we still have some hurdles and stuff, but, you know, he's met my family, I met his family. You know, I don't think we've gone a day without talking to each other. We've both gone on European tours since, where we didn't, like, we had a rough spring where I didn't see him for a month. Then I was home for 3 days, and then I didn't see him for a month. Like, it was kind of intense. But I have handled this relationship better than I have handled any relationship. And he is probably the best boyfriend I've ever had, and I am probably the best girlfriend I've ever been. And I'm really proud of myself, like, genuinely. Like, I want to write a blog if I was good at my writing goals. But it is really interesting. I mean, there's still things that I'm learning, and there's difficulties, and all relationships, you know, have hurdles, but I've been prouder of every hurdle that we've gone over together. Like, he's just a solid dude, and I have my issues, but I feel pretty solid about myself. It's nice.
What projects outside of just stand up and writing am I trying to get off the ground? And, you know, what is it that I'm trying to work on, and what are my dreams for them? Which I am trying to pitch sketches to Fitbit because I'm obsessed with them, and I have a good relationship with Runner's World. So this woman from Runner's World that really likes me, that I've done corporate work with, wants to see if we can pitch something together to them. I don't even care about the money. I just think it would be cool to have something kind of in my resume that's kind of corporate, and to kind of, I'm trying to do more corporate stuff, because if I do one or two corporate things a year, my rent's paid, and then it kind of frees me up to do the road gigs that I want to do, rather than this desperation to take anything that pays me money so I can pay my rent. So I just wrote a thing. I just wrote a bunch of questions and dialogue for Amazon Echo via Capital One. It was the most money I've ever made. And if I got like one more of those, my rent's paid for the year. So I want to get something like that, whether it's Fitbit or any kind of company. So my goal would be both corporate stuff, whether it's speaking at corporate events, doing more corporate stand-up or corporate writing work. And Fitbit is the one that I'm currently developing, but want to develop more and see if I go down that road. And then I guess also I've pitched a bunch of podcasts or web series. I'm just kind of pitching all these small. I was never a reality show person, and we're actually kind of getting away from it in the U.S., but like seeing if I can develop anything for myself on any level that kind of gets my name out there. So I have an idea for a podcast or web series called Mealy Meltdown, which is where I interview everyday people about their worst meltdown, and they kind of take me through their day. Everything from, like, you know, did you miss your cup of coffee? Did you just get dumped? What was the catalyst at work that kind of set it off? How did you feel right after it happened? Can you laugh about it? What were the consequences? Did you get fired? You know, are you in jail? You know what I mean? Whatever. And then almost kind of similar to this, now it's been a year, or now it's been 5 years. What is what does your life look like? Is it the best thing that's ever happened to you or the worst thing that's ever happened to you? And to kind of use it as a way to kind of show people that everybody is kind of off and kind of mentally ill, and not to judge people with mental illness, but also to see the kind of where you can kind of lose your shit and not be on the best page, and how it can help you get healthier in a lot of ways. So that's something that's kind of a passion project that I've been throwing around and seeing if anybody will pick it up. I guess I just want to do more stuff to make mental illness, like destigmatize mental illness in some kind of project. So yeah, just weird side projects, just something that's outside of my wheelhouse that I've been doing for the last couple of years, and see if anybody's interested. Yeah. So I guess I want to know if anything has happened with Mealy Meltdown, whether it's a podcast, a web series, if I got the gumption to do it on my own, if it's something that I'm going to wait until maybe my short film's done with, but also any kind of corporate stuff. Did I, how far along down the process did I get with some of these corporations? Am I trying to do something that's a complete separate side project that is completely different from stand-up, or something that I tie it in and kind of make myself a package to people?
I'm amazing. Can we talk about that? Like, I have done things. It's always like you come up with an idea and you hope to hit it at 100, 110%. And I've hit most of these things at least at like 40. Like, that is something. So I have been doing some corporate stuff. The Fitbit thing, man, I chased it down and I had a bunch of meetings about it, and I still don't think it's dead. But it, through the avenue that I was pursuing it, it has not turned into anything, which is disappointing, because I think I have great ideas and I genuinely want to do something with Fitbit. And I've bought like 3 of them for friends. And I mean, I like have talked strangers into getting them. But I did do another corporate writing job, actually through a guy that I knew at Runner's World that now works for a blood cancer charity. So I wrote a bunch of donate your bone marrow sketches for good money, and that was a good experience, and I would like to do more stuff like that. And it inspired me to talk to some people at I knew a guy that interviewed me at Psychology Today that had a relationship with the Jed Foundation, which is a suicide prevention mental illness foundation, and I'm now doing a podcast with the Jed Foundation. So I just interviewed my first person. Her name is AJ Lee. She's a retired WWE wrestler. Her mom was bipolar, and then she found out she was bipolar. Her book was called Crazy is My Superpower. It's an incredible, really funny, really smart, you know, inspiring book. And so I interviewed her. It hasn't come out yet, but she was my first person. We're still like naming the podcast, and I got hired by the Jed Foundation to basically do their podcast and then to create interesting, funny, thoughtful content to both the podcast, but also anything that kind of has to do with mental illness. So, you know, with suicide prevention, it's kind of heady and hard, and, you know, you don't want to make light of it in a insensitive way, but like, you can also talk about mental illness in a lighthearted way. Like, I had ideas for like 7 ways to know you're having a panic attack, and misconceptions of OCD, and the differences between bipolar 1 and bipolar 2, like stuff like that. And so I'm in the baby steps of doing more stuff with them, but this is kind of like the testers, doing this podcast with them and making some of the videos attached to it. So I'm being paid to do that, and I'm excited about it. I hope it leads to more things. We'll see what happens when it gets released. I still do want to do stuff with Mealy Meltdown, but I'm kind of seeing where things happen with the Jed Foundation first before I either do something with them about it or branch off on my own. Yeah, I mean, I've submitted to a bunch of stuff for corporate stuff. People are starting to get my name out as a corporate writer. So it's like, it's not 100%. I haven't like completely changed gears or, you know, financially fixed myself in that realm, but I have done some work in both of those avenues, and it's progressing, and I feel good about it. Man, when I say I'm going to do something, I really do it. Might take me a while, but I get shit done. Yeah, this is so good. I'm so proud of myself right now.
So when you look back at, you know, 2016 to 2017, what is the memory or the thing that happened that kind of fills you with joy and is the thing that you're glad you went through?
Oh, man. So what is it in the last year that, I mean, every year I just cry a lot, but then like I look back and I'm like, oh no, I'm glad I went through that. Like, I don't know. I mean, I have to say, I think you can kind of see it in my answer. Like, the difficulties and challenges of this current relationship that I'm in has been really good. I mean, I'm not saying it hasn't caused me anxiety and it hasn't stressed me out and it hasn't been hard, but it's been handled in a way that every step of the way I've been really proud of myself. And I think I've spent most of my life not liking myself, almost kind of how I was talking in the previous interview. Like, I have noticed that I do like myself more now. It's certain triggers, whether it's professional, personal, or, you know, I don't know, just certain life events kind of offset me to either start using bad habits that I had earlier or create new bad habits, whatever it is. But I'm starting to get a handle on those triggers and not digress. I would say how proud I've been in my personal relationship has offset my ability to be better in my friendships and work. I mean, I think I've always said, like, your home situation kind of, I don't know, I'm not expressing myself very well, but like, if you live with your parents and your parents drive you nuts, or you have shitty roommates, or, you know, your cat's peeing on your bed every time you come home, whatever it is, like, that stuff can kind of affect your entire day because this is supposed to be where you can relax. And so if that's chaotic, it kind of offsets the rest of your life to be chaotic. So I've always tried to make my home life really smooth and easy so that it gives me like this good base. And I feel like my base is starting to expand. So my base used to literally just be my room. And then I had really good roommates who become my roommates. And then I had like a stable place to live, so it became my physical home. And then as I became financially stable, it became because I'm also financially stable. And now that I have a boyfriend that is supportive and wonderful, it's become my boyfriend. And then as I've had closer, better friends, it's become my friend group. And as my parents have calmed the fuck down and gotten off my back a little bit, it's become my parents. And I feel like each year my base has become more of my home and has expanded and has become more comfortable. And with that, I've become more comfortable with myself. So I feel like this year I've learned how to balance and enjoy and feel good about my base, if that makes sense.
So when you look back at this interview from 2016, what questions do you feel don't apply to you anymore? And what answers do you think kind of miss the mark and aren't a part of who you are anymore, and you probably would have taken them out?
Nope, I feel pretty good about myself. I don't know. I don't think I changed so much in the sense that my goals haven't changed. It's just the importance of each goal and how I've handled each goal. And I can see how that's developed and changed the priority of it. But other than that, I mean, I think I'm proud of all the questions I asked. I think I've seen progress in every area. I don't know. I feel pretty good about this last year. I didn't even realize.
Okay, so if you could go back to your original recording date and make changes and do it better, what would you change?
I mean, I give myself this advice, I think, every year. Don't care so much. I put so much pressure on myself. Like, the one thing I have a chalkboard. I have this like kids chalkboard in my room, and I usually write like summer goals, and then it'll be like, you know, finish your album, do this short film you keep talking about, you know, blah blah blah. Like, it'll be like four or five goals, and then sure enough, fall will come around and I will have done almost none of it, and all I change is the word summer to fall, and then maybe I might get one of those five goals done and I cross it out, and then again I just move fall and I write winter, and eventually all of them get crossed out. But the goal was to do it in 3 months, and really it's taken me like a year and a half. And so kind of seeing that pattern and being a visual person, I've noticed that if the goal is just to get it done, what's the big deal that it took 6 months instead of three, or it took a year and a half instead of 2 months? You got it done. If the goal was to do it and you did it, who cares that it took longer? So even listening back to this interview, I accomplished, like I usually do, about 40% of what I wanted to accomplish. And then I can now kind of look back and be like, good for you. Wait, you did 40%. There's people that do 0%. There's people that don't even make goals. So I in life, I mean, in general, I've always just been a slow developer. Like, my mind works slower. It takes me a long time to get out of bed. But I do. I get out of bed and I try and I fall short of my goals all the time. But it doesn't mean I'm any less of a creative person, and it doesn't mean I have any less value. It just might take me longer. And I think what I've learned, especially in the last year, but really, I would say in my 30s, is that's okay. You're at least trying and you're making some progress, and it's okay that it doesn't happen as quickly as you would have hoped. But some of these things you've never even tried before, so how would you even know if it did actually take 3 months? Maybe it never was supposed to take 3 months. So I'm learning how long it takes for me. I think that's that chill, it's going to be okay, you're doing enough, voice needs to maintain.
That was Liz. This was so much fun to put together. It was great seeing her, and I loved it. I really enjoyed it. Her thoughts on how you don't know how long something will take if you've not done it before is something that I massively empathize and relate to. I do this all the time. Deadlines are important to me. Deadlines really push me to get something done. But if I've not done the thing before, how do I know it will take a month or 2 months or however long I've set myself? So it was great to hear someone else struggling with the same thing. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. I was also really proud of her for changing her mindset on dating and finding someone who was good for her. It's weird because before the interview, we were talking about how I was taking a break from dating and how she's taking a break from dating how it was changing our mindsets and helping us find new people that we're attracted to. And I was really proud of her for this, and I really liked hearing her honest answer to herself and then talking to her about it after that. It was great. And also, I'm really proud of this. Her podcast, Mealy Meltdown, went live a few weeks after we recorded this episode. So if you'd like to listen to that, there's a link in the show notes. It's so exciting. I love the fact that this podcast also offers behind the scenes of projects that are coming up, but also isn't just about promoting stuff, which I find interview shows tend to be all too often. So that was great, and I'm really excited about that for her. So please do check out that. If you're new here, please do remember to subscribe. I do 2 episodes a month, one on the 2nd and 4th Friday of every month. If you're old here, please do consider giving us an honest, ideally positive review in iTunes. If you have anything negative to say, just email it to me directly. You don't have to put that out publicly on the internet. Why add more negativity? There's already a lot of negativity on the internet. And either way, please do consider joining the Facebook group. It's called the Audio Time Capsule, and it's on Facebook, obviously. You can also follow us on Twitter at Audio Time Travel. Both places are great for finding out about new guests, getting exclusive behind the scene content, and more. Also, you can become a patron of the podcast from $1, where I'm going to start putting out exclusive content and behind the scenes pods and all kinds of things like that. So if you'd like to become a patron of the podcast from $1 an episode, was this worth $1? I think it was. Basically, becoming a patron means that you help the project continue going. You help support it financially. Each episode, you pledge to give a certain amount. You can put a cap on that, but remember, I only do 2 episodes a month, so you'll get exclusive behind-the-scenes content, extra questions. I'm going to try and work on some video stuff. I'd like to get a budget together to do some video episodes, but in order to do that, I do need money. So if you'd like to keep the project going financially, become a patron or do a one-off donation on my website, which is simonkane.co.uk, or become a patron at patreon.com/audiotimecapsulepodcast. You can find all the links to that in the show notes, on the website, and in the pod player of your choosing. The Audio Time Capsule is a Fruit That Got In Gravity's Way production for the internet. All elements were created by me, comedian Simon Kane, except the music that was recorded and composed by David Jordan. Thank you very much for listening, thank you very much for subscribing, and thank you very much for rating and donating if you do. I'll see you all in about 14 days' time. Bye!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.